Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com and archiving at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also link to our guests. We'll be giving you that web address in just a few moments so that you can continue your study and research and gathering information on all of this. We encourage you to do that. That's one of the reasons why we're here, so that you can basically better yourself, move forward in your life, and help the people around you as well. It's always been an interesting analogy that we are all walking up a ladder, and there is someone above us and there is someone below us. And the person above us is reaching their hand down, we hope, to help you to come up to the next rung, and you hopefully are reaching down to help the person below you come up to the next rung. And that's what we're here to do. We lay out this smorgasbord. We ask you to take what works for you, what resonates with you, and leave what doesn't. There's no reason even to pick it up if it doesn't look good or taste good to you. We want you to enjoy your life, and we want you to thrive, which is kind of what this program is about today, thriving rather than just surviving. And it's going to be a little different, in the sense that there's a little biology going on, maybe psychology. We're going to be talking with the author of The Whole Brain Thinking, How Whole Brain Thinking Can Save the Future. Whole brain, not half brain, not left only, not right only, but left and right and all of the other parts in between. Why left hemisphere dominance has brought humanity to the brink of disaster, and how we can think our way to peace and healing. James Olson is my guest via Skype. James, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Richard, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is rather interesting, because when I first read the title, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, is this guy... is he blaming the progressives and the left wing and the Democrats for all of the ails that are befalling the world today? And then I read further and I realized it has nothing to do with that. Although, and that's the other thing too. I've always struggled with the construct that the left brain and the right brain, what do each of the halves do? One is more logical and the other one is more creative. And I always thought, well, left brain must be more logical, and the right brain is more creative. That was the hook I used, but I have a feeling I'm incorrect in that, right?
Well, you are correct.
Oh,
both hemispheres are creative, but the right hemisphere has the big picture. It's an open system, and it's the most creative, and the left hemisphere, which is a closed system, relies on what it already knows, and it's not so creative, but it has ways to help us. It gets the details of our creative art.
So in this particular work, and you've written a lot of other materials and you have studied, I can't believe the list of various things that you have studied and researched and certainly lectured and written about. But, this encompasses all of human existence, so to speak, and that from your perspective, it's because of the fact that we have focused so much from the left brain perspective that we haven't used the whole brain. And I remember hearing years ago the mathematical equation: we only are using 10% of our brain. That's the other 90% we haven't utilized. And I've talked with various people over the years, and some agree and some disagree that actually we're using a lot more. But it seems to me like we're missing out on a big deal here that would really help us move forward as a civilization, as a species, in our evolution, let alone in our civilizations and societies. But what is the right equation there? Is it only 50%? Is it only 10%? And I know that, again, we could talk on an individual basis, but maybe a little bit bigger picture. Where are we in that regard, and why is that such a big deal?
Well, scientists now think that we use all of our brain, but not all at the same time. The brain is seen as broken up into modules that do different things, and whenever we have a certain task, that module, or actually probably several modules, come into action to fulfill our intent. So, but on the other hand, we don't consciously make use of it. The brain feeds us two streams of information, the left brain stream and the right brain stream, and each see different things and do different things. They complement one another. One does what the other one does not do. So, but together, they give us the entire picture, the big picture and the details. So the right brain, which is most often used by most women, is the big picture brain, and the left brain, which is, tends to be used by dominant in males, is the detailed brain. And but there's something called genetic complete or genetic dominance. And genetic dominance sounds complicated, but it's real simple. It takes the left brain system and the right brain system, and it plays with them in different ways, just the way it plays with the colors of the flower petal. And so we can, under complete dominance, we can be either completely right brain dominant or left brain dominant. And that's what most of us are. And in that case, we don't understand the other side very well. One side tends to take over. The other way genetic dominance works is to create a team. And we probably, most of us think that we're fed by a team system. Both hemispheres are informing us. But really, for most of us, only one side is informing us and dominating the conversation. But in a few, both systems work. And there's one other way genetic dominance works. There's something called incomplete dominance. And in that case, the two systems, whatever they might be, whether it's flower color or the hemispheres, they blend into a system. So it's somewhat left brain and somewhat right brain. So those are the four systems, left brain, right brain, hybrid, which is a mixture, or the team system. And we can inherit any one of those. But consciously, we can kind of also get the information that those systems would give us simply by asking our friends and neighbors, our peers, you know, just asking for other people who know these things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm curious also, are there examples down through history where there have been maybe smaller groups as opposed to nations or states who have actually been able to incorporate the whole brain functionality, if you will, into their society and civilization?
Well, the Chinese and the Indians, probably both Native American, I don't know, but in this case, I'm referring to the Indian continent. Those are both whole brain, relatively whole brain systems. They always come up against the ego, the I, the male part that wants to dominate the system and not let it be free. But that's the tendency, is to be more, use both sides of a brain more often, which gives them an advantage. And it's kind of scary. When we need to catch up, we need to use whole brain thinking, because either side, either system is inferior to the whole. And we need to catch up.
Now, you did a gender split, you know, left brain male, right brain female, in a general sense, and which leads me to think that if men and women got together and functioned as a unit, as it were, like in a marriage, that, you know, things would really function pretty doggone well. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, when we understand our non-dominant system, and which is the system of the people, you know, often our spouses, when we understand that system, we are better able to understand where they're coming from and why they believe what they believe, and it makes it easier to accept them and be at peace with them.
So then that would lend one, at least me, to think that for centuries, let alone in our modern day, when you have a legislative body that is made up exclusively of men and maybe one or two, maybe three women, you have a real imbalance there, which may explain, and again, it doesn't matter which side of the aisle they're on, why we have a lot of the problems we have today. Is that also a fair assessment?
Absolutely. The men tend to be left-brain dominant, and men are physically stronger, so we have been able to impose our will on the feminine half of culture, and we naturally set up our learning institutions reflecting the way we see and process information. So in effect, we are teaching women to think and act like men, and that's not good. We need the women to be themselves and to get the message out, to explain to men what they're missing by just having one perspective and a limited, and the left brain perspective is a closed system. So it's kind of the system that gives us a closed-minded attitude. And it's hard to break through, but it's also logical, and it's also, in some respect, it's also connected to the right brain. So men can be, like myself, and like you, I'm sure, can accept the qualities of the whole brain and using the right brain and use them effectively to be more successful in our thinking and in our lives.
Well, I know that just recently, my wife and I, we've been working on several projects around the house, and one in particular, we were building a whole new chicken run and coop for the addition of chickens into our family. And then also just the other day, more of a mechanical aspect, putting in a new air conditioner in the window of our little two-room cottage. Since we don't have central air, I mean, who does in Santa Barbara and Southern California? Although that's starting to change, I think. But anyway, I was putting this in, and there's something that I think I've realized, and I'm not saying that I'm good at it every single time there's a project, but I realize how important it is for her to feel a part of the project, not just supervising, but really wanting to get her hands dirty too, in a both literal and metaphorical sense. And so when I was putting this new window unit in, there were certain tasks that, she did because she wanted to be a part of the process. And so it's hard for me to put it in these words, and it's like I let her do these things, but I wanted her to be a part of it too. And so that way, when we're done, you know, hey, we accomplished this, and now we're much cooler than we were a few hours ago. I think that helps to cement the bond a little bit more. Have you had those kinds of experiences? Cause I don't know. I don't know if you're married and, or have been married or, have worked, side by side with other women in the workplace and so forth, where you've had these kinds of experiences.
Well, what you say makes sense because the right hemisphere is interested in service. It's sees the collective picture. It sees us all as one, and that's why women tend to be more service oriented than men. They often give up their lives and careers to their family and their husband, and that's because the right brain is service oriented. So it makes perfectly sense that she would want to help and want to contribute. And also, she the oneness of the right hemisphere. And I'm just assuming she's right brain dominant. We don't know that, but that's typical. And so that sort of person would want to be in on the project.
Well, I know how important it is for everyone to feel included, regardless of gender, and it's one of the things that we're dealing with in our country now, in terms of certain segments of our society being told that the way that you live, the way that you work, the way that you worship, and so forth and so on. You're not a part of the mainstream. I'm sorry, but it just, you don't fit. And it's like, well, wait a minute. But that's the whole point of our society has been this, this aspect of gathering up all of these different ideas from different sources and then coming up with a new innovation. I mean, there is no invention. There is nothing that was developed, whether it's philosophy, whether it's education, politics, et cetera, or economic system, that is developed out of a vacuum. That, you know, it all comes from what came before. And that's how we move forward. That's how we grow and how we evolve and how we change, right?
Yes. And the left hemisphere is skeptical and energized by fear. And the sides are always complements. So the left side is energized by fear, whereas the right side is energized by love. And the left side is skeptical, and the right side is trusting. So you have this skeptical, fear-based system, and the ideas that come out of it are limiting, and they're separative. We wall ourselves off when we have fear, and we exclude people. We exclude the people who look to be the most dangerous. So yeah. So the brain is behind all of these activities, and once we can see the source of it, the source of our problem, we have a better chance at finding solutions.
I know that we're facing a lot of challenges in our world these days, and I think that this particular work would be very beneficial. You know, a practical inquiry into the operating system of the left and right brain hemispheres and their surprising influence on our lifestyles, politics, business, and religion. And that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about how whole brain thinking can save the future. You know, and of course, I asked earlier on about this whole aspect of other civilizations or groups of people getting together using whole brain concepts. I'm curious as to how this all began for you. What was the aha moment for you that made you realize that if we don't do something to change the way in which we, I guess, think as far as this is concerned, incorporating, I like the term you use, operating system, of both the left and the right brain hemispheres, that, you know, not only are we doomed to repeat history, but we're doomed as a species to annihilate ourselves. I mean, that a lot of people are really worried about that right now.
Well, we really have control over this process. I know a lot of people think when you talk about the brain that it's kind of, well, it's probably interesting, but it's not going to help me. But in this case, the two brains are sending out information, and we have a creative choice in which side to listen to, and or whether to find a way to integrate the two, which is essentially the correct answer. It's what we need to do, and we can do that. We really have control over the mind, even though we don't have control over the brain. We can control what we think. We control where we take our mind, and so we can take it into the left hemisphere and take it into the right hemisphere, look at both sides, and then make a decision. Otherwise, the option is to just run on automatic and do whatever our genetics have assigned us to, you know, left brain or right brain. Or we can just listen to what our peers tell us. Some people don't think for themselves. They do what the majority does. But these are all decisions that we make, and we are managing our mind. This is mind management or systems management. I sometimes refer to it as conscious creative mind management, because it's a creative system where we have two dynamics, the left and the right system, and we extract from both of them and create our creation based upon what we see.
Talk to me about the nature of dualistic operating systems, because when I use or hear the word dual, or dualistic, if you will, reality in which we live. It's good, black, white, dark, light, dark, and so on and so forth. Opposites, diametrically opposed opposites, if you will. From what you're describing, as far as the left brain, right brain operating systems, they're not diametrically opposed. There are just two of them.
Yes. And the left brain sees them as opposed because the left brain is competitive and it's the dualistic one. It sees things in this black and white linear, on a sort of a linear continuum. And so, but the right brain sees that they're complements. And so that's why it's important to get the right brain perspective. And that's what I really wrote the book, to explain the right brain perspective. But then I found out that to explain the right brain perspective, you also have to explain the left brain perspective. So I ended up explaining both perspectives. But the right brain perspective incorporates the left brain perspective. Information comes into the right brain, and then it's sent to the left brain to be processed. And basically, it comes back to the right brain, even if we're left brain dominant, some complexity there that we don't understand yet. But anyway, the right side sees the big picture and it's ultimately in control, although we can get lodged in our left brain and not realize this.
There's another element, and it has come to the forefront of our conversation socially. And that has to do with sexual orientation. Talk to us about that aspect in this conversation.
Okay, well, it's been commonly believed that the left brain is masculine and the right brain is feminine. And when I looked at all the characteristics of the two hemispheres, all the characteristics we associate with masculine behavior were found on the left brain side of the chart, and all the right brain the feminine characteristics were on the right side of the chart. So that establishes that these two systems produce masculine or feminine gender, or masculine and feminine gender. We all have some of each. But then when I found what the effects of genetic dominance, that they can be combined as a hybrid or combined as a team, then I understood that there is a feminine gender for those who have right brain dominance, and there's a masculine gender for those who have left brain dominance, and there's a hybrid blend, a mixture of those who have this hybrid dominance, and there is a team system in which the masculine side of us is attracted to women and the feminine side of us is attracted to men. So we're bisexual because we're attracted, both sides of our brain are attracted to its opposite, trying to achieve completion. So and it's even more complex than that, but we'll start there.
Okay. And what I have been saying to people, especially in these conversations about gender identification, is I think the best way for me to phrase it at this point, is that I learned back in the late 60s, early 70s, as a child in biology class, that every single human being who has ever been born, because I can't speak to cloning or test tube babies, well, I guess test tube babies would work too. Every single human being started out as a female. We were all females. Every male, every last male one of us was a female, and every female was a female to start with. And it was then, we don't know, I don't understand where the instructions were given to throw that X chromosome in there and let's make them a male or not. And then there's the conversation, again, as you say, this gets very complicated, where you get a person who is born into this life in a particular gendered body and doesn't feel comfortable in it, feels more comfortable in the other gender body and goes through the process of changing that. And so then you've got the whole brain issue that we're talking about, and it makes it, like you said, it makes it very, very complicated.
Well, yes, and it's even more complicated. I'll just very quickly throw something out. When information comes in to us, it's processed by one of the four systems. But then we deal with that. We inject our thoughts into that, and we respond, and information goes out, and a separate system can dominate the outflow of information, our response. So if there's one of four systems that governs information input and one of four systems governing information output, there are 16 different systems that can be governing our input and output of information, and each one has characteristics of gender.
Before we take our break here, I wanted to ask you about the role of and where, if we can define where it resides, because we've all been struggling with this question down through the ages. Ancient wisdom teachings sort of talk about it a little bit. Where does intuition fall into this? Is that part of the brain's capacity, or is that another element of the human physiology or psychology, if you will? Men don't usually exhibit intuition per se. Women do. Is that just part of the right brain aspect for females?
Intuition is a part of the right brain aspect, but men have a feminine right brain too. So men are able to get flashes of intuition. Men are just less likely to respect that when they are typically think about things, or they'll get that flash and then they'll overthink it and they'll change it. But you're right. Yes, it is. It's a right brain quality. It comes from the right brain. Remembers the open system, mm-hmm. and it takes all the information in from the universe is sending this, everything, and it processes it. And the right brain is, it's where intuition comes in.
I have a feeling too that for men, because we're not raised to listen to and trust that little still small voice, if you will, or that intuition, that when those impressions come, maybe it's the left brain aspect that feels threatened and then doesn't want to acknowledge. I mean, I have to be honest with you. There are times when, and I've been working on this all my life, I will get an impression of, a direction to go a particular way. And it's like, I don't want to do that. I want to make the decision. And I've had experiences where I will travel half a mile and the impulse becomes stronger and stronger to the point where I can't ignore it anymore. I turn around, I go back the half mile and I make the turn I should have made a half mile ago and go in that particular direction that I was impressed to go. And so I tell people jokingly more than anything else, that if you're going to listen to and not follow the still small voice or that impression, why bother listening, if you're not going to follow it? But for men, like I say, I think there's a certain sense of a lack of independence and control. And somehow we need to, as males, incorporate our intuition into that control that we so desperately want coming from the left brain. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I think that's true. And I want to point out that all the left brain qualities are there for good reason. It's easy to compare the two sides and kind of demonize the left brain side, but the left brain side's there to protect us, and it serves a very valuable function. And the only problem comes in when we use it out of context, when we don't use the right brain big picture, and when we overuse it, when we abuse it, then people get hurt. So we want to not fall into the trap of demonizing the left brain, but instead try to find ways to use it, especially for right brain people that don't understand the left brain. And I think that's what's happened in a lot of our culture. right-brain people, which tend to be liberal, because the right side is the liberal side of our brain, are really angry about what's happened to the politics. And they tend, when you get angry, you tend to, it's easy to fall into the fear side and get into the left brain side and start demonizing people. And the liberal community has demonized the conservative community. So, and that only contributes. And so the conservatives have demonized the liberals too, of course, but, and that's more of a natural response. But then we get to where we can't talk to each other, and we don't respect each other. And we need to respect that each hemisphere, each group, liberal and conservative or masculine and feminine, have special insights. And we need to respect those insights and try to listen to them in the same way that you described listening to our intuition.
Yeah, it sounds to me more like the whole dualistic concept is less of diametrically opposed opposites as just different sides of the whole, and that we need to incorporate both. It's almost like the concept I remember hearing about in meditation where, okay, you want to tell the mind to go away, to shut up and be quiet so that you can meditate, so that you can listen for that little voice. And of late, I'm hearing more and more of, no, you don't shut out the mind, because if you try to shut out the mind, it will fight even harder to stay in. You need to make it a part of, you need to incorporate it. And this is part of what I've been trying to understand myself when it comes to a lot of the things that are going on in this world. I'm trying to understand why. Because I'm seeing it from this perspective. For example, North Korea, or at least the North Korean government, is so afraid. I mean, that's what I'm getting from them, is fear. And that's why they're doing what they're doing. I asked the same question of the ISIS and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and these types of groups. What has got you so upset? Can we sit down and talk for a little while? So at least I can understand. Before you kill me, I'd like to understand. I'd like to understand why you're so upset. I mean, my God, there's got to be a way of resolving our differences. Or in Washington, you know, why are you people so bent out of shape over these particular issues? What is it that's got you? I think the best way to put it: why is it that's got you so scared that you're doing the things that you're doing that makes everybody else scared? That's kind of where I'm coming from, as opposed to, oh, look at what they're doing. We've got to stop them. We don't need to talk to them and find out what the problem is. We need to stop them. But we've been doing that for centuries, and we're still doing it centuries later.
Yeah, we, for some reason, there are some people that don't like to talk to their enemies. I've never understood why we don't more often have high-level talks with the North Koreans, even though you can't trust them. I mean, I'm not saying you can trust them or that you can just do whatever they ask, but there's no reason not to talk to them. But that's kind of the skeptical, fearful, left-brain way of doing things that dominate the men and our government.
Yeah. Well, I've often said that I think that there are certainly sufficient M-class planets in the universe for every single one of us 8 billion people to occupy. However, that's not the situation. We're all here together. And it seems to me that we have as much right to exist as the North Koreans or the Israelis or the Russians or the Australians, whatever group you want to name. And we've got to find a way to coexist. And I'm hoping that maybe we can find that way, and maybe through the work that you're doing, through the book that you're talking about today, How Whole Brain Thinking Can Save the Future, Why Left Brain Dominance Has Brought Humanity to the Brink of Disaster, and how we can think our way to peace and healing. My guest is James Olson. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, and we ask you to stay where you are. We have more coming up.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best. understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan with James Olson, and he is the author of, I think, a really intriguing work. We're going to continue talking about it, How Whole Brain Thinking Can Save the Future. And I'm curious about one particular area. I've always been intrigued by this, and what was really funny is I heard about this concept at a religious radio station I was working for 15 years. And I thought, really? This is really true? Explain to me about the aspect of sacred geometry and its role in this whole left brain, right brain concept and its role in perception.
Well, sacred geometry is a term that describes kind of the foundation of reality. It's maybe hard, pretty hard to explain it in a way that's entertaining without, you know, I'm not sure what to say. It's sort of the blueprint or the fabric of reality, and it helps. What it does is it helps you to understand how things can be connected, different ways that the universe can be connected, and you can see that we go from the linear. You can combine the linear to form the circle, and so the linear elements, which represent what the left brain sees, and the holistic elements, which are spherical, which just think of all the, everything you know and everything you've ever learned, and just being out in the that you can learn being out in the space around you. And so that's these are details, and the linear elements represent the details of information, and so it kind of gives you a rough guide, a foundation of sorts to understand how the universe is put together. I don't know if that makes sense or not. It's hard to explain.
I do understand, and probably our listeners have a better understanding of sacred geometry than I do in that respect, but I appreciate your explanation. And it's just, it's one of those things that I thought, well, I still struggle with the aspects of physics and quantum physics. It's like, physics is physics. How is quantum physics better than or greater than standard physics? Of course, then everybody started using the word quantum in the title of whatever it is that they were doing, you know, and I just like, really? Does that really make it better than if you didn't use that word? Well, it gets people's attention. It got mine, obviously. geometry. Go ahead.
I have an example in the book. If you think about the story of the Knights of the Round Table, the Knights were all very competitive, and each one wanted to sit at the head of the table because the head of the table was the best seat. It was the safest seat. You could see everyone. You could see their actions. You could more easily draw your sword because you didn't have people on both sides of you. So everybody wanted to sit at the head of the table. And no one wanted to sit at an inferior place on the table because that would obviously put them at a disadvantage. So after some thought, they finally figured out that they could build a round table. So that's a difference in geometry. So they built a round table, and so everyone could sit around it, and everyone had an equal position at the table. There was no head at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's created a spirituals from this geometric physical change in geometry. It produced a positive spiritual response.
Well, I know that again, we're always looking for those different ways of looking at things, and obviously, we all have, or most every single person has, a left and a right brain, but I'm curious, we talk about the hemispheres of the brain, but does that not leave out the other aspects or parts of the brain that are not part of the hemispheres that are also working in conjunction, Are those literally separate from what this conversation is about, just the left and the right brains?
Well, the spine has a left and a right. So we're divided left and right to reflect these two systems that explain the universe to us. And so does that answer your question?
Well, I'm just curious, because now I'm going to make a faux pas or two here as far as names. But there's the medulla oblongata. You know, and there's
all of these parts have a right and left.
Okay.
People talk about the amygdala or some other part.
Yeah.
But all of these have a left and a right one, and so each half of the body has a different system operating in. So the left side of our body is run by the right brain, and the right side of our body is run by the left brain. But one of the two systems is a dominant system, so it kind of is nests the two systems and keeps the two sides of the body from fighting each other. That's kind of the way it's set up.
You talk about also the holistic look at, you know, looking at the holistic aspects of science and the brain and consciousness. Can you give us a little bit of a description about that?
Well, the way I see it, the brain, the two sides of the brain process information and send it to consciousness. So I just think of consciousness as a stream or a body of, maybe a body of water above the head, and these two streams of information are feeding information up into it, and that body is symbolic of all of our knowledge. And we see the whole of everything only when we are listening to both sides of this information, and when we are the conscious part of it. I mean, we have consciousness, or our consciousness. There's a lot of different ways describing consciousness, and you can get into disputes doing that. So I just try to keep it simple. And consciousness is our awareness of what's going on. And the two brains are feeding this information to consciousness. So we can end up with left brain consciousness primarily, or heavily right brain consciousness, or one of the blends.
Now, this particular book gives a great deal of explanation about all of the different aspects. It helps people to understand this concept that you are putting forth, a thesis, if you will. Is there a practical method you have found, or are there people that you are aware of who can assist us in the process of marrying the findings of science with such intuitive experimental-based truths, along with those ideas about reality, as you talked earlier, that the great wisdom traditions have always attempted to convey? Is there a practice that we can incorporate into our lives to be better whole-brain people?
Well, I think meditation surely does that. Meditation brings us into our right brain. It shuts off the left brain, at least to, or shuts it down, or just lets it speak occasionally, depending upon how effective you are at staying in the right brain. So that's one technique. And another is soft eyes, getting away from the focus, which is the way the left brain views things, and trying to see the reality around us in a more holistic way, that should lighten up the right brain, because that's what the right brain is trying to show us.
And are there any individuals, and maybe we don't necessarily need to name them, but are you aware of individuals? Are you one of those people who has had moderate to great success, if you will, in living a whole brain life and existence, to where you do understand better the big picture?
Well, I know there are others. I don't have any idea of how many. You know, it's impossible to see into people's minds. But it looks like we're pretty polarized when you look at the voting patterns. On the other hand, and when you go into the voting booth, you only have two choices. So it doesn't matter whether you're polarized or not. You're being given a polarized choice. So even the voting records are not a good indicator of how many people there might be with the whole brain. But it's just common sense, and it leads us to truth. And I think the forces of the universe are moving us toward greater truth and putting us into situations where it's so obvious that we can't ignore it any longer. And I'm hopeful, even though it looks pretty bleak. We're kind of in a bad place, but at least more and more people are recognizing that they need to take part in our political discourse and be more attentive to what's going on.
What has been the predominant, I mean, yes, we're talking left brain that has sort of propelled us down this path that we're in right now. But is there a particular set of decisions, and I'm asking in a very general sense here, that have been made from that left brain perspective that we, I guess the best phrased way to put it is that we haven't learned from history yet. And so we doom ourselves and we continue to repeat it.
Well, you ask a big question there.
Say in the last 100 years or 50 years.
We males are in charge and we just set up systems the way we see things. And it's in a closed system. So it's hard to advance because our left brain closed systems that doesn't want to take in information, just like I don't want to get partisan here, but the Republicans, when they worked on the health care bill, deliberately shut out any input from Democrats. And they've done that in various ways for many times, but that's kind of one of the most blatant examples that we've seen on such an important bill to just shut off one half of the political voice of the country. It attests to the way the left brain deals with things.
Well, and of course, the argument obviously has been made in both directions, actually, that both sides have done the same thing down through the decades. There's no question about it. And it's just gotten worse and worse over the years to the present day. So I'm thinking that, well, if you were to incorporate women into the dialogue, into the discussion, with the proviso that nobody is going to be excluded, that everybody is going to be included in the conversation, but that there has to be a collective consensus. It cannot just be, as we've kind of used the term here, it can't just be left brain dominant ideas here. We've got to incorporate the right brain ideas as well.
We do, and we saw that in the last vote on healthcare, where two of the three votes against it were from women. Mm-hmm. So we do need more women in the political system. Not being a woman doesn't automatically make you a good political representative. We have, whether you're right brain or left brain, you can still make mistakes and you can still be poorly educated, misled, and just stupid. So just simply electing women isn't enough, but that's certainly a good step, and that's something we need to do.
Where does spirituality play a role in all of this? And then there's a big difference between adopting a particular philosophy that might exist or that may have been existing for hundreds or thousands of years. And as I have come to experience in conversations with, for example, atheists, who I have found to be very spiritual people. But where does spirituality, what role, I guess, does spirituality play in all of this? Or can it play in this?
Well, spirit is a big word to define, but the simple way that I think that most people can relate to it is through feelings. We feel spiritual events. So we can think about them, but we think with really what we're doing is thinking about what we're feeling. So where spirit comes into our lives is through feeling, and both of the brain systems give us ideas and give us feelings. I mean, depending upon whether the ideas scare us or they excite us or whatever, the different ideas can give us feelings. But it's that's it. There's religion is just sort of the collective way of dealing ideas about spirituality. But spirituality is the essence of who we are, and that is best known through our feelings, how we feel.
And so are you optimistic or pessimistic, or a better way to put it, is your glass half full or half empty about our future?
Well, I don't know if it's going to get worse. It may get worse, but ultimately it will get better. So I'm optimistic ultimately, but don't ask me for timing.
No. I would never do that. I know you're not here to predict anything. You're just trying to put a light on what is right now and what has been for centuries. And hopefully people will perk up their ears and basically be reminded that, you know, we have the freedom to adjust our perception and our creativity through our close attention. And by shifting our brain perspectives at will, we can do this at will. This is not something that you have to plan for. You can do it right now as the occasion demands. And we've got lots of situations where, you know, the occasion demands it. And we don't have to do it just necessarily at the ballot box, James. We can do it in our own homes, with our families, with the people that we relate with at work, for that matter, in starting to make those kinds of changes that start, it seems to me, that would begin to have a ripple effect, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. And most of all, it's going to feel good. It should feel good when you're doing it right. I mean, that there are always difficult times, but it has a positive effect. And it's coming. I mean, we all want that. We all want to feel better. We all want to be happier and make better decisions. We just need to figure out a way. And that way is by understanding each other better and understanding that the people we see as the opposition are really our complement in some way, and that they have some aspect of truth. Maybe most of what they have say is wrong, but there's some aspect of truth to what they're trying to say, and we need to reach out and try to find that.
That's a remarkable work, and I'm glad that you've put it together and brought it to us. How whole brain thinking can save the future, why left hemisphere dominance has brought humanity to the brink of disaster, and how we can think our way to peace and healing. And I'm grateful for the time that you have given us here on the program. I'm curious also as to that aspect. How did this mantle come to be yours to carry, as it were?
I went to a weekend workshop one time where a neuroscientist from the University of Texas came up and mapped the minds of the participants and then graded them, and the grade's not the right word. He evaluated them and put us in a line with the left brain people on the left end and the right brain people on the right end. And I thought I was balanced, and I found myself third from the end on the left. And I wondered how this was affecting my perception, how I saw things different from the people on the other end of the line. And that's what got me started.
There was a diagram that I saw once of a line, left, center, right. And they took, and of course, if you're at the far left or the far right end of that line, they then took the line, the ends of the line, and they brought them together in a circle. And I thought, well, that's rather interesting. And it, the point that was trying to be made was that no matter how far to the left or far to the right you go, you're still in the spectrum. Do you understand that?
Yeah, they're all part of the whole.
Yeah, and
that's what we're trying to do by bringing the brains together, is to bring those two ends of the line together where they can hold hands and smile at one another.
Well, that's what we're trying to do with this program, is take a look at the various points on the line, you're standing on the points on a circle, and you move from one point to another to continue to get a perspective on whatever that event is that's going on in the center of the circle, so that you can make better decisions, that you can make better choices. And, of course, that's what we're all about with this program, is trying to give people choices and knowledge of those choices. And you've done that through, obviously, it's you know, the first part of the book is rather scientific, but there's some practical things in the second half of the book we encourage folks to check out. There is still a lot more that we could talk about, but I encourage people to go to your website. And to that end, the best website for folks, I think, to go to would be the website thewholebrainpath.com. All one word, thewholebrainpath.com. And to think, as a child in school, James, I used to write everything as one word, no spaces. At least that's the way it looked anyway, until I learned how to put the proper spacing in there. But thewholebrainpath.com is the website, and James Olson has been my guest. And again, I thank you so much for your time. Before I let you go, I've got, first of all, I'd love to continue this conversation. So if you find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio.
Thank you. It'd be my pleasure to be there.
And we look forward to that. And before we let you go, I have three final questions for you. The first is, who is James Olson?
Well, I'm just a kid that grew up on a farm and was very lucky. I had wonderful parents. I had a good education. I was able to study in Paris and Vienna, and that really opened my mind. And I read the right people, found out the importance of the holistic perspective, and I wanted to share that with people, that let them know how important it is that we use the whole brain in our thinking.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to reduce the polarization. I want to reduce the anger. It's not even safe to go on Facebook anymore and see the angry people. So, you know, we need to get our act together. And plus, I love this country, and I see other countries getting ahead of us because we're so divided and screwed up, and we need to come together before we lose everything.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, I think it's to spread this word. This is very important. This is fundamental. This is fundamental to who we are and how we think. And somebody needs to promote this. And it's turned out that it's been my job. And I'm very blessed to have it. You know, it's helped me tremendously.
Again, thank you so much for joining us on the program. And the website, once again, is thewholebrainpath.com, thewholebrainpath.com. And How Whole Brain Thinking Can Save the Future, the author, James Olson, my guest. And again, James, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here. Namaste.
Namaste. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to love.